is a heavy and vulnerable conversation to have. This platform is a safe place for all individuals to come share their life's journeys of surviving grief without judgment.
I'd like to welcome you all to the QT Surviving Grief Podcast. My name is Tiffany Ware, and I am here today with a very special lady. I actually met her back a long time ago. Me and her brother, Michael, we were in fifth grade in Mr. Oliver Goodman's class at Baker. Yep. And we had, this was back in the day when we had those clear notebooks, and I had a picture of her and my little cousin, Austin. And Michael was like, how do you know my sister? And I'm like, oh, this is, Austin is my cousin. And from that point on, me and Michael was bonded. Like, we have a common, something yes. in common.
You are Austin. Family. You are
we
family.
We was family. We was family from that point on. And so, I would like to introduce the slum and present to others, Miss Heather Lipscomb.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It is a complete honor, and you have always been special, you and your family to me. You were Austin's babysitter many times.
Yes, church on Sunday, every
weekend. Always want to go down to Tiffany and TJ's.
That's right. You know, that's right.
Janet and Tim did not count. It was Tiffany and TJ's house. So.
That is too. We had so many good times. Yes. We used to have Austin every weekend just yes. about. It was, I said, that was my first baby. It was yes. definitely my first baby. Yeah.
I said, I know my child is good when people ask to keep him. So.
Oh, yes. Oh, Austin was our baby. Yes, yes, yes. That is too funny. But yes, that made us family, and we have just powered through that journey ever since. So how old is Austin now? 28. Wow. Yeah. That's a yeah. long time. Oh. I know time flies.
I don't feel like I should be old enough to have a 28-year-old, but
I know. Yeah. I know time flies. But I just thank you for being here, Heather. And I'm going to start the conversation off. Of course, we're on our grief podcast, but I always try to find something fun to introduce and like a nice icebreaker. Quinn was always so funny and the best personality ever. So I try to wrap with something about him and end. So I want to ask you this opening question. What brings you joy right now today?
Right now I'm in the Mimi stage. So my grand girls, I miss them when they're not here. And sometimes I'm ready for them to go when they are here, but I have learned to grasp that and just accept it, and watching them grow and do things and discover who they are and their personality and all that is, it's a love. Like my grandmother used to tell me, you don't know love mm-hmm. until you have a grandchild. And like, I didn't grasp that until I had mine. Of course, Cam is our bonus.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
Sayla is ours, but they are a complete joy. Complete joy. So
I'm sure I see the pictures, and y'all are just so active as a family. You make sure you keep y'all's family pictures up to par. Still send mama pictures every Christmas. Yeah. You have always been good in being that glue for your family, Heather, and I've always admired that.
Thank you.
And for everybody, just keeping us all informed as to what's going on with your crew. So
yeah.
I can see where they definitely bring you their joy.
Thank you.
I can see that. I can see that. Well, we are going to hop on into a little bit of conversation. I want you to just tell the people who Heather Lipscomb is, your background, where you're from, just a little bit about you.
Okay. So I was actually, many people do not know this, I was born in Michigan and came here. I am a Saturn kid, which is now GM. And so I've always been a part of the South. My grandparents on both sides are from Alabama and Tennessee. So I've always had that Southern connection. Moved here, got involved in the community. We joined a church, like I grew up, I graduated from Central, went on to college, had babies, left Columbia, came back to Columbia. I currently work in dentistry. I run a practice, and I am a wife. I'm a mama. I'm a Mimi. I'm a sister. I'm a daughter. And I'm a friend. And I'm in a really good place. Like I used to couldn't say that. But I have, I have journeyed to, and there's days, but
yeah.
I'm in a much better place. So,
Yeah, that's powerful. I like how you said that. You know, it's not always been that way, and we're going to get into that. Yeah. But I appreciate that honesty because I think sometimes people see, oh, the Facebook and, oh, what you got going on now. Oh, but people don't know your story, which is why we're here today. And so I appreciate that, Heather. That's very important.
Thank you.
Very important. So speaking of that, do you remember the first time you experienced loss? Even if it was as a child, you remember the first time?
Yeah. So I literally text my mom this morning because two things instantly popped in my head. My grandmother Patterson, which is my mother's grandmother, when she died. And I asked mom, I was like, hey, did you take me to that funeral? She texts me back, no, that I didn't go. But like, I remember her dying. I remember my mom crying. I remember that. But I didn't grieve her. I feel when I look back at that, it's like, yes, I knew her and I went to her house and these things. And I remember things about her, but I don't feel like I grieved her in a way I've grieved others. And so the first one I really recall that I grieved was my grandfather, my dad's dad. What is crazy is the night before he died, we were in Florida on vacation, and I dreamed a dream. I dreamed about him in a dream that he was in this tunnel and he was waving at me. And at the time, I didn't know what that meant. Like, I had no idea. I mean, I told my mother about it. I told my parents. I told my other grandmother about it. And they didn't really feed into that. Like, what was that? But I now knowing, I'm like, that was him telling me bye that night. And I just didn't realize, like, that was God giving me a peace because we were very, very close. He like took me to, we did Burger King runs together. We would go to the airport and we would watch the airplanes. And he would always say, you'll always find peace in the sky. And I never knew, like, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, you're like, peace in the sky. Like, what is that? You know, like, you never think about that. And so I remember, like, us coming home to Tennessee, packing very quickly, driving to Michigan. I remember going to get a dress with my grandmother for the funeral, going to the funeral, looking at him, and, like, he was so peaceful looking. And then I remember it was just like it was over. And it was like to digest that, to like go back to his house. He'd not be there. He's not going to call us. It was just over. And so it was like an ache that I just, I kind of put on the back burner because you don't know. I feel like so many people, when they first initially go through grief, you're like, what is this pain? Like, what is this hole? You don't know what it is. I mean, in the back of your mind, I feel like you do, but like, to verbally say what it is or act it out or feel it, you don't know.
Right. No, you don't. Especially if they're young, Heather, too. My grandfather died. It was probably the first big loss I had. And he, similar to you, I mean, we did everything together. Picked me up from school, And it was very different. And you don't really understand it all. And it's, like you said, that void of like, now I have to start a routine. Okay, now somebody else got to pick me up from school. Yep. Like, as a young kid, that's really hard to understand and process. So, thank you for sharing that. And what was his name?
I
was
George.
Like to honor people. George. Yep. Okay. George. Okay. So, George Stewart. Awesome. Okay. Well, Heather, one thing I had noticed and something I do know about you, I had seen a quote you wrote on Facebook, and what you stated was, I cannot think of anyone stronger than a mother who has endured the loss of a child and actually still breathes, like is still able to go on and forward in life. And I talked to my mom early on about, you know, loss she had, our oldest sister, Tanika, infant loss. And I know that's something that you have experienced. So I want to take this space to really honor Ashley and Bryce in this moment. And I just want you to tell us their story.
Okay. It's funny because people ask me sometimes, like, how many kids do you have? I used to struggle with saying, oh, I have three kids, but only one here. Or I have two kids. And before I had Bryce, I would struggle with that because I didn't want them to feel awkward. But it's like, I didn't want to not say that I had these children because I did have these children and they lived and they have birth certificates and death certificates, and they're buried, and like they did exist in my world and other people's worlds. They was impacted. So Ashley was my firstborn. She was born in 1994. I was 17. I was very young. Had no clue what I was doing. It was not a, of course, it was not a planned pregnancy.
At all.
I was scared to death. I was about to go into my senior high school year. And ironically, she was born on my grandpa George's birthday on August 15th. So I always thought that was a special connection that she passed on his birthday and he's got her. Like, I always found comfort in that. Like, there was a reason God allowed that to give me some comfort. So she was stillborn. Back in 94, there was not the technology there is now at Murray Regional. And I went to the hospital with back pain. I did not even know I was in labor. I went to the hospital in back pain and they said, oh, you're about to have a baby. And they were like, we don't even know if she's in position. So we need to take you down to ultrasound and see if she's breech or she's in position for you to deliver. So I was on the elevator and got really sick. Like throwing up. I was dizzy. I thought I was going to pass out. And they were like, just, you know, just keep breathing. You're in labor. Like, just that's what it is. So they got me down to ultrasound. And they could not find her heartbeat. And it was about an 8-minute time frame from when they had her heartbeat on the floor to the time they got me down there. And they were like, we need to rush you back up there immediately. And Antoine was there with me and we were both scared to death. We did not know what we were going to do. And they were like, we have to get this baby. You have to deliver this baby now or we're going to probably lose both of you. And what had happened was I had placenta previa and I was hemorrhaging. So that means that the placenta had detached. So that was, of course, her air supply. And she, for that 8 minutes, she had no, I was not breathing for her anymore. And so we lost her, which was at 17. You don't know what that is. I mean, I had no idea. And I remember they took her, they cleaned her up, they put her in a pretty dress, they brought her back to us, and they let us hold her. And I just remember, like, it was so surreal. Like, you don't know.
Right.
I was, you're in shock, your adrenaline is going. Like, looking back at that, I'm like, how did I even do this?
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, the next day I had her, and the very next day should have been my first day of my senior year. But we were at a funeral home planning a burial, which at that time, like, I knew no one. I still don't know of anybody at that age that buried a child. Like, I have seeked out groups. I have, like, went on forums trying to find another, like, teenage mom to connect with. Usually it's like a miscarriage or an abortion on a forum, but not an actual, like, delivery.
Delivery.
And so to this day, I still have not found that, but I feel like God will put that in my life when it's needed at the right time. But that was her story. And so her name was Ashley Lexine. Stewart. She's actually named after her grandmother. And her resting place is Polk Memorial. And so we go there and we see her, and she has birthdays and Christmas and all the things.
Awesome.
So, and then Bryce is Bryce Taylor. He was born in 2006. He was my best pregnancy. He was he wasn't so much planned, but I was prepared for a baby. I was at the age where I had a career, I had a house, I could buy whatever I wanted for him. I didn't have to say, oh, I'm worried about how I'm going to pay for this car seat or whatever. Like, we could do whatever we wanted for him. Very easy pregnancy. It was probably the only pregnancy I showed. With both Ashley and Austin, I felt like I didn't gain a lot of weight. I was pregnant. but yeah, I wasn't pregnant. So
right.
With him, I was very pregnant. You could tell. Okay. I had the biggest belly I had ever had, and probably weighed the most I had ever weighed, but had a great pregnancy. I had my first baby shower was my job gave it to me. And okay. For some reason that night when I got home, I did all my thank you notes. I thought, I'm going to go ahead and write all these thank you notes and take them to work tomorrow and I'll be done with it because I don't want to have to worry about this. And I went to work the next day, gave everybody their thank you notes, and I had a doctor's appointment that afternoon at 2 o'clock for him, just like a regular check. Mm-hmm. And I was coming home and just started having really bad pain. Like I couldn't even hardly push the gas on my car. Okay. And I was in labor. And so I had pulled over to the side of the road. An ambulance ended up coming to get me because I couldn't make it.
Yeah.
Got to the hospital. He was breech. And so it was like, okay, plan B, let's do a C-section.
Okay.
So did a C-section. And every mom that has a baby waits for that cry. You know, like you want to hear your baby cry. And my mom was in the C-section with me and I didn't hear the cry. And I kept saying, what is wrong? What is wrong? He's not crying. And I kind of didn't think that much of it because when I had Austin, his cord had wrapped around his neck a couple times and he didn't cry right away either. And gotcha. So I was like, okay, you know, he's going to cry in just a second. And then I'm on the C-section table and they're like rushing him out of the room. And I just kept telling my mom, like, what is wrong? What is wrong? And of course, she didn't know either. And then they took me back to a room and said, we don't know what is going on. He could possibly have floppy baby syndrome. We're going to take him to Vanderbilt. Okay. And I was like, oh my gosh, they said they're taking him by the angel to Vanderbilt. And I was like, oh, well, I'm numb from the waist down, so I cannot go. And I'm like, mom, y'all just go. Y'all leave me and go. So as soon as my legs were able to walk, one of my mom's really good friends was there with me. And I said, it's 2 a.m. and I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. And there she was like, you don't have any clothes. I said, I'm leaving.
You're going. And, you got to get to the child.
Mark reached out on the front and on the back. And we was gone that way. So got there. Still didn't really know what was going on with him. Wires everywhere. Breathing tube. I had personally never seen a baby with that in an incubator with white, like still trying to process. Like I had this beautiful baby and hair. I mean, his hair was like almost down his back when he was born. The nurses were like, we've never seen a baby with this much hair and all this. And so we started going through a process to try to figure out what was wrong. It wasn't floppy baby syndrome. That's usually when they come out and their muscle tone is just kind of suppressed. So they're just like a floppy baby. And so that's kind of how he was. And that usually goes away within 24 to 48 hours in a normal type setting. His was not. He was not breathing on his own. Nothing. So we started the process to try to figure out with specialist after specialist. And like, they were like, we've never seen this. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you're Vanderbilt. What do you mean? We've never seen this. Like, what is wrong with him? So his doctor came in and said, the only way we can try to figure this out is to start doing some biopsies on him. Mm-hmm. And so we went into doing biopsies. They did a surgery on his leg. It was the first one. They took part of his muscle out of his thigh and tested it. Still, they could not figure it out. So then they came back to me and said, hey, we would like to send this to Baylor and to Johns Hopkins because we don't know what this is. We need a bigger team for him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, whatever, just whatever you need to do, please do. So they sent it to Baylor and they sent it to Johns Hopkins. And this was like week. I'm really bad with timing on this because I feel like I remember some of it, but I don't. Yeah. I think it was like the end of towards the second week when they sent it to those two places. And then we got some results back and I was there by myself. Usually someone was always there, like my parents, his mm-hmm. dad, someone was always there at the hospital. And, mm-hmm. for this particular time, I was by myself and they said, "Hey, we would like to meet with you at 1 o'clock and talk to you." And I was like, okay, I had no idea they had gotten the results back. And gotcha. So I go into this, like, look like a conference room and there's like 10 doctors, there's nurses. Like, it was very like, what is yeah. going on? And they had me sit down and they said, John Hopkins has found out what this is. And it's called mm-hmm. myotubular atrophy. And what that is, it's a form of MS, which I carry an MS gene. Okay. And it only happens in little boys. So if it was a little girl, if it was XY, it would, you know, it would have been a different scenario. Okay. And so basically what it is at the base of your brain, mm-hmm. there's a disconnect. And so he could know in his brain that, like, the way they described it is if we held a match to him, he knows we're burning him, but he can't move it away. So, like, there was no gotcha. Muscle tone, like the brain would not tell his arm to move or his mm-hmm. lungs to breathe. And through this, I learned that your heart is a whole separate muscle. So his heart was working completely mm-hmm. fine where the rest of his body was not.
Gotcha.
And so they gave me the scenario of he would never breathe on his own. We would have to trach him. The lifespan of these children is anywhere from 7 to 11 years old. Okay. They will have a home. They would have to have a nurse 24/7 mm-hmm. to get their secretions because they can't do that on their own. Basically bedridden, wheelchair, I mean, mm-hmm. never any form of life, maybe never talk, mm-hmm. all these things. And so I was 30 at the time and okay. I thought, you know, I don't want to make this decision, but like, I just wanted to pray. Like, at that time I didn't know, like, okay, mm-hmm. do the doctors know everything? Are they going to, you know, is God going to come down and miraculously heal my baby? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or what is going to happen? So, family came in, we all were, of course, devastated by this news and yeah. I have to make a decision. And I was like, how quickly do I have to do this? And they were like, no, it's not a, it's whatever, like, whatever mm-hmm, you need mm-hmm. to do, we'll do. Like, the hospital was not kicking us out or making me, nothing of that. They were, I will speak to their praise at Vanderbilt forever. Mm-hmm. They were so good to me and to my family, like, set us up at the Ronald McDonald House, allowed me to stay in the room, just anything to make it easier for us. Mm-hmm. They did. Yeah. Yeah, awesome. I'm so thankful for that. But I had a peace to let him go to heaven.
Okay.
And so on mm-hmm. April 21st, we all were in a room together with him, very peaceful. The doctor came in, removed all life support, and he lived for about 54 minutes with no tubes. And I just got to hold him and they would just come in and check every so often. And then finally they said, he's gone. And, that was hard. It was really hard, really hard. I tell this story, but I then got to drive him to William's funeral home. They let me take him. Okay. And I remember praying, like, please don't let us get pulled over. Because I was just holding him in the front seat. And sweet, sweet Rick Points, who now is at Heritage, greeted me at the door, hugged me, said, whatever we need to do, we will do. If you want to stay here with him for a while, you can. He took me downstairs, gave me more time with him. And he took him just like he was a normal newborn into his arms. And he said, I got him. I'll take care of him. And then had a funeral for him. And that was hard because I was at an age where other people were having babies. And we were at that age where, like, we were all kind of settled.
Right.
And I'm like, this is baby number two, though, for me.
Yeah.
You know, I just couldn't understand, like, why. And then it's kind of to piggyback on that, it was just a few years later, Austin was in a horrific car accident.
Yes.
So I was already helicopter paranoid mom about babies and losing my children. And he was in a very bad wreck. And I right around the street from our house, and the paramedic, they were putting him on the life flight helicopter, and they said, we're going to let you see him because we don't think he's going to make it 11 minutes to Vanderbilt. And I got on the helicopter, and he said to me, Mom, Bryce told me to go back. And I didn't even remember him saying that in that moment. It was later on when we talked about it. He was like, Mama, Bubba told me in that field to go back. He told me to go back. And so I believe that in all my heart that that is what happened. And that child walked out of the hospital 3 days later, and he's fine. I mean, we have some scars, but he is a walking miracle.
A miracle.
So most people don't understand the bond him and I have.
Right. It's just different. Right. It is.
It's just different. He has walked with me through a lot as a kid. He didn't know Ashley because that was before him. They would be 2 years apart. But I always tease him that he would never have had girlfriends if she was here. She probably would not have allowed that.
Right. Not a big sister. Heather, you just unpacked a lot. Ooh, that was a lot. There's some breathing space needed there. Mm-hmm. You are a strong woman to, you know, have to go through that process twice, have to make that decision on Bryce's life because you kind of knew the quality of life he would have. And then, like you just mentioned, what I remember when Austin went through that it's been a lot of trauma within that whole window of what you've dealt with. One question I have for you is, did you ever go to therapy or anything during Bryce and Ashley's within that? I know it was a little year span, but in those years, did you go to therapy? Like, what was y'all's perspective on that?
So, with Ashley, it was kind of buried. I feel like when looking back, I don't feel like anyone knew how to direct me. My parents. My parents were there for me, absolutely. Yes. But we didn't talk about it. It's not like it was a taboo thing or anything. It's just, I think they didn't want to rock the boat of saying or bringing it up. They kind of wanted me to, like, go on and have my senior year and graduate and, like, have some happiness. And so I just kind of, like, subconsciously pushed all that back. I mean, I did remember her birthdays, and other friends of mine were having children. And, I have friends now, like, excuse me, one of my really good friends, her daughter and Ashley would be the same age. They're just like a month apart. And so every time I see her, I'm like, they would be the same. Yeah. You know, what she's doing, Ashley would probably be doing, you know, sort of thing. So I do think of that. With Bryce, it was a little different. It hit me a whole lot harder with him. And so I've always been one. I'm the oldest child. So you're independent, you push through, you just do what you have to do. And I had Austin, I had a 10-year-old. So I was I can't just like fall down and break. I have to continue to go. Like, I still have to show up for ball. I still have to get him to school, like all these things. And so, had Bryce, after he passed away, I went back to work about 3 weeks later. Okay. With everyone telling me, do not do that. Yeah. But I was like, the best thing for me is to get my brain back on kind of normalcy.
Yeah.
And so I was like, let me go back to work. And so I went back to work, which was way too much, way too fast. And in July, I broke. Okay. I just broke. It was one night. Austin was upstairs. We lived in Murfreesboro at the time, and I broke. I said, I cannot do this. I do not want to do this anymore. This pain is so much. I don't want to do it. I was tired of faking. Are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. You know?
Right.
I just broke. And so I did attempt to take my life with some pills. And that was the point I started healing, though. Grace of God. You know, I went to the hospital. I ended up doing 30 days inpatient, which I needed. I needed that. I needed someone to tell me it is okay to not be okay. You don't have to be strong. You don't have to carry this. And I needed that. Austin needed his mom to do that. Like,
for sure.
He needed to see me break because I would like try not to cry in front of him. I would, you know, if I did cry, it was like, you know, get yourself together, you know. I didn't ever want to put that on him, but I needed that break. And so I truly think that was the start of me grasping maybe this much of the start of the healing part of it. And of course it all flooded back from Ashley, from my grandfather. Like it just, it was like a tsunami came in.
Yeah.
I was just like remembering things that I hadn't remembered in 10, 11 years. Like it was just coming back. Like it had just happened yesterday. Yeah. And, one of the counselors I went to, she said, it's the acknowledgement now. Like you're acknowledging it. And she said, I had so much guilt of like, after that, like I tried to take my own life because like that was like I took it as that was the weak way out. Like I looked at myself like the shame and the guilt of that compiled on all this. I was like, this is the easy way out. And she was like, no, this was your step.
Yeah.
You know, this was your first step. Yeah. And she was like, she's like, it's not an easy way out because look where it has brought you. Like you're about to go into the real hard part.
You know? Yeah. Like, it's true.
You're about to go in the real hard part. You thought that part was hard, but this is going to be the real hard part. And so I had a very good doctor, Dr. Inda Curry. I will forever shout him out. He, little bitty Indian man. I think he's about 4 or 5. And he was so direct with me. He asked me hard questions and didn't take my "I'm okay" answer.
Okay,
you know. And I needed somebody to do that. And sometimes you need an outsider that doesn't know you to say that to you. That's what I needed. I didn't need anybody to like pat me on the back or I needed that hard, tough, like push you kind of scenario at that time.
Definitely. Yeah. We need that. Like you said, that person who doesn't know anything about you. I 100% see that. And, you know, you talked a lot about Austin going through a lot of that with you. How did you help him process some of that, Heather? Were you at a point where you could help him? Or, because I'm sure, I mean, he understood Bryce.
Yes.
Y'all have pictures of him and Bryce.
Yes.
So how, at that age, me and 10 years old, like, how did you help him through that?
So I remember when we got the diagnosis and I had my parents brought him to the hospital. He usually came on Sundays to see his brother. Okay. And the Sunday, he had held him for the first time the Sunday prior to that. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was explaining to him what was going on, he looked at me and he said, "So Bubba will never play ball." And I said, "No, he'll never get to play ball." And he said, "Then he needs to go to heaven." And so I knew that he knew what that meant. That, he knew that he would not be his Bubba the way he wanted him to be his Bubba. He was so excited when I got pregnant. He was like, I'm going to have a baby brother, sister, because he was the only child.
Right.
And, you know, he's got tons of cousins. And,
yes. Yes.
But he never had a baby brother or sister. And so I knew he got it then. And then he would, when Bryce was still in the hospital, ironically, Bryce was born on the 23rd of March, and Austin's baseball number that year was 23. And so one of the games before Bryce had passed, I left the hospital, came down here to his game, and he's like, Mama hit a home run for Bryce. And of course he did. And we still have that ball. It's signed, and Austin kept that ball because he hit it for his brother.
Yeah.
But he understood it more than I even think I did.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Because he was just the child innocence of it.
Yeah.
He really understood it. And even when we were planning the services for the funeral, he was like, we have to get a football balloon. We have to get a basketball balloon. We have to get a baseball balloon.
Yeah.
And I'm going to send those to heaven. Like, he was so, you know, when we let the birds go, he was like, there's three of them, Mom. That's me, Ashley, and Bryce. Like, he related so many things.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, this kid is just... Yeah. He helped me more than I probably helped him. But he always, you know, he would write. I have pictures. I'm sure people have seen it on my Facebook. He would write RIP Ashley and Bryce on his football stuff. He's always been one to say, you know, I have an older sister. I had a baby brother. He's never hid that from anybody.
Uh-huh.
He goes to the graveyard with and without me. He knows they're buried in baby land. My dad is buried there. So he has his own way of doing that. And then when Sayla was born, she had to go in the NICU for just a little bit, and he called me, and it was a trigger for him because never knew the NICU until Bryce. And he said, Mom, she's not breathing, and they're taking her to the NICU. And it was during COVID, and he's crying, and I can't get to him because no one was allowed at the hospital.
At the hospital, right.
Yeah. And I said, Bub, she's going to be fine. Like, she's made it this far. She's going to be fine. And of course she's fine. I know some things like that trigger him.
And I could see that for sure. Yeah. Yeah, going because that took him right back to his brother.
Oh, yeah.
And what? Yep. That was probably a huge trigger for him.
Yeah.
But I like how you mentioned a lot. Austin has definitely honored his brother and sister throughout his, you know, even when he was younger on up until now.
Yeah.
Writing their names on the jersey, you know, going up there. I think that's a really good way of honoring. And like you said, he doesn't shy away from the fact it's not, oh, I'm the only child. Like, no, I have a sister and a brother. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very important in young children. Mm-hmm. And so speaking of that, you talked a lot about he was really involved in the planning of Bryce's services and giving suggestions. One thing when I talked to my mom about her losing Tanika that she did not do, Heather, was bury her children. Do you feel like you got any sense of, I don't want to say closure, but do you think that helped you navigate the end of their lives actually by having the service, burying them, and now you have a place you can go back to? I know that's a big regret my mama has.
Yeah.
But I didn't even realize that they were. I'm glad I know that now.
Yeah.
But do you think that helped you a little bit through your process?
For me personally, yes. And to this day, like, my best friend wants to be cremated. And I'm like, you have to promise me that I can see you before that happens, because I just, for me, and this is personal, it's not, I'm not putting this on anyone, but I had to have that closure. Like, I have to see you. I want to say goodbye. Like, I seen Ashley, I held her. Her casket looked like a white, I remember, like, it looked like one of those white igloo coolers. Like, it was so little. And, you know, Bryce's home, the outfit that my mom bought him to go home from the hospital in, is what we actually buried him in. And so those sort of things, you know, I'm not going to say they're comfort, but it's like I did get to fulfill some of those things with them. You know, I took lots of pictures of Bryce. You know, I wish we would have videoed things, that sort of thing. I wish that would have, it just wasn't a thing then. You know, it wasn't the world we were in then. And so, but I do not regret that. But I do have friends like your mom that has, even with miscarriages or loss of a baby, that they didn't do that. And some of it may have been the direction that the funeral home or the hospital directed them in. They may have not told them these other options. Yeah. I had one friend, she said, I didn't even know that was an option. Like, she, at one point she said, Heather, I didn't know what happened to my baby. She said, they just took my baby and then they sent me a death certificate. She doesn't know. She's like, to this day, like, I never knew, like, what did they do? And I'm like, that's even harder, I feel like, because what you don't know, you know, knowledge is power, and like knowing this things helps so much. And so, it's hard to not.
I'm glad you're sharing these options, because I feel like it may be someone who, you know, people are listening to this, Heather, and you're going to help a lot of people out. Like, know your options. Like you said, knowledge is power. And so you take the initiative to say, no, this is what I want for my, you know, baby, if anyone's ever in that situation. And I think go ahead.
With miscarriages, and we'll get to this. I don't want to jump ahead, but in my grief counseling and things I help other people with, like, there's so many women who have lost children. And, you know, I'm like, you need to name them. Like, do you feel in your heart that baby was? Do you feel that baby was a girl? Do you feel that baby was a boy? Like, name them. You know, they're in heaven. Like, I have no doubt all these babies are in heaven, running on the streets of gold, and they are living their best lives. And I do truly feel like when these mothers and fathers, I do not want to exclude them, go to heaven, like, they're going to hear mom and dad. Like, those babies are going to know that that's their parents. And so I tell people all the time, like, if you can, and it's a process. It's not something you can just say, oh, I'm going to do this, you know. And even with your mom, I have a good friend. She didn't have a service either, but she had one just a few years ago.
Okay. Yeah.
They did it, and it was at her house. It was, you know, the people that were there when that happened that she had shared with, they had a service, and they kind of like told the memories of when she was pregnant and that sort of thing. And so I feel like that helped her tremendously on connecting these dots that was forever missing for her, because she didn't have that. And and she didn't know how those people felt about that. Like, me losing Bryce affected my parents tremendously. And so you never know, like, your mom, how many dots her living that out would connect for other people, even you and TJ. Like, hearing that story that would connect these dots, you know?
That's important. It's like you even though, I don't, like, however long it's been, you're creating that space. You hold space for that memory and honoring that child and actually having, you know, something to do that in. So I think that's, I'm glad, I like how you mentioned that, Heather, because I think sometimes people feel like, oh, that was 20, 30 years ago, but that doesn't mean anything. You can still revisit things and still have the opportunity to make that memory. So I'm glad you mentioned that. The only other thing, I know we're kind of wrapping up this segment of talking about the kids. What do you feel like people can do if they know of a young lady who has experienced the type of loss you have with their children? Do you have any advice or suggestions for the family members, for the friends, for the church members, of how to help that lady navigate that particular loss?
Prayer is just
prayer.
There is so much power in prayer. Like, I literally have been prayed on my whole life. Like, people have poured into me and poured into me. And at that moment, I may not have felt it, but now looking back, I'm like, it was by their prayer that I made that. Like, and then just being open with no judgment. I think that's so important that, you know, it's not of, you may not know the situation or have walked through that situation, but whatever their feeling is valid.
Yes, it is.
You know, it's their story, it's their journey, it's their healing, and there is no right or wrong in that.
No.
And so I think allowing someone to have freedom in that is very big, because if you feel like you can't have that, then you're going to withdraw. You're not going to go to the church. You're not going to go to somebody. But if they're open to hear that and just listen, not everything needs their response when they're talking.
Right.
Like, you don't have to.
Right.
Don't hand them the tissue. Let them cry. You know, I learned that through my classes and stuff. Like, it's good to cry. You need to cry.
Release. You're releasing.
Release it. You can't hold all that in, because it's going to come out in another way if you do.
Yes, it will.
It's going to come out.
Yeah.
Whether you like it to or not, God is going to remove it from you.
That is very, very true. I think that's some good advice. Because I think a lot of times, depending on who may have passed away, people may shy away from, oh, that's a touchy, a baby, that's a touchy topic. I'm just going to like distance it a little bit, you know, like they're kind of scared. But I appreciate you for really giving people some advice if anybody's going through that on how to help support that person. Well, Heather, the next story I want you to tell, I want you to tell the story about Mr. Gary Stewart, your father. Let us know who Gary Stewart was to you.
He was an amazing man. I am truly a daddy's girl, as most girls are, I feel like. I feel like, you know, you're either all the way the daddy's girl or you're not, you know.
That's true,
And there's just something about that bond that is special. My dad was, he was a good dad. Like, he was always there. Bass, softball, dance, cheerleading. I mean, I remember when I was cheering, he knew my cheers. He would say my cheers and pick with me. We were so much alike. Like, we, it's a joke on the Stewart side that we all have bad knees. So, like, my dad had bad knees from playing ball, and then I had bad knees. My brother Michael has bad knees. Like, it was just carried on, but my dad was just genuine. He was who he was. And what he said he meant. He was not a man of like many, many words. Like, he wouldn't talk your head off. He was a big jokester. But when he did speak, you knew what he meant. And if he cared about you and loved you, it was for real. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I love you, bro, you know, or like, I'm there for you. Like, my dad was there. If there was somebody on the side of the road with a flat tire, he would stop. You know, if he could help in any way, he had that servant's heart to go. Like, my dad went on mission trips. He helped in the community. He always helped my mom. Like, whatever she did, he was reeled into it with her. You know, decorating or whatever. He was there. He was the best fried peanut butter and jelly sandwich maker I know. So good. It's like grilled cheese, but it's peanut butter and jelly.
I'm going to have to come over. We're going to have to do that here.
So good.
Fried peanut butter and jelly. Okay.
He made the best pancakes. he was just truly there. Austin was a papa's boy. I mean, from 3 months, he would sit literally like in the crook of my dad's arm and watch ball with him. And a funny story about that is, I had this outfit. You know how you have a diaper bag and like you keep one outfit in the diaper bag for like the in case, I, you know? Uh-huh. So it was green like polo onesie from the Gap. And my dad, Austin would even mess his clothes up, but I would come home and he would have that outfit on. I'm like, Dad. And he was like, I just like his outfit. So he just always had that outfit on. And he, you know, taught Austin how to play ball in the yard. Mm-hmm. We had to reteach him to play t-ball because my dad had just pitched to him when he was like two and he was hitting the ball. And so when he went to play t-ball, I was like, no, you have to hit off the tee. And my dad was like, no, he can hit the ball. So he was just that person to so many people. And even after he passed, you know, people would come up to me and be like, you're Gary's daughter. And I'm like, yeah. And they would tell me these stories about him at work or at church or the gas station up from my parents' house. You know, the lady from there knew him. And it was always kind of the same story.
Okay.
And so I came to the conclusion, like, that was truly my dad. You know, because yes, it's different stories, but it's always the same words, just in different stories, that who he was to them. Yeah. And so I'm proud to be his daughter.
Yeah. So
he was truly a blessing. My hero, always. He'll forever be my hero. So.
Yeah. I always knew you was a big daddy's girl.
Yeah.
I always knew that. And like you said, his relationship with Austin, they definitely had this special bond.
Yeah.
Yes.
One more funny story I have to tell about.
Yeah, go ahead.
Austin was a senior in high school, and all the home games, my dad was on the flag crew for Riverdale. Okay. And so the flag crew always, of course, had to be on the opposite team's sideline to do the chains and flags. Mm-hmm. And so this whole game, the coach is like, get number five. Number five, like, take him out, like, the whole game. And so the beginning of the fourth quarter, my dad was like, that's my grandson, by the way.
Right.
But he said, I had to listen to them the whole game. And he said, finally, I was just like, I'm about to tell them, like, that's my grandson.
So like bring it on down.
Yes. He was so proud of him. My parents never missed a game. They never missed a Riverdale game. I told him, I said, I think you guys went to more Riverdale games than you did Central, but because they just never missed, whether it was basketball, football, whatever, they were there. So we're an athletic family and a little bit competitive. But he was truly one of a kind. And anyone that has met him, you know, like all my girlfriends call him Daddy Gary. They call my mom Mama Lynn. Yeah. He truly loved everybody, you know, wanted to help them. And he was just a man of God. And he lived that out, like with his servant's heart. He truly did serve others. And I'm proud of that.
Yeah. He left a legacy.
Definitely.
And that's what is being, what you're talking, that's what that's displaying right now.
Yeah.
What his legacy was and all the lives that he touched along the way.
Yeah. Austin, even Justice right now is working on her next step in her career, and she's not working. She's taking care of the girls. And he has said, Mom, I don't want her to work. Like, I want to, because my mom didn't work outside of the house. Gotcha. And so she sold Avon. Bless her.
Yes. That's big customers. Yes, it is.
So, I mean, I think Mama Teen was one of her biggest customers at one
point.
She loved it. But I see, like, the things that my dad instilled in him.
Yes.
I mean, he's 28, and he's already, like, fulfilling some of those things that my dad poured into him. When you think they're not listening, they truly are.
They are. Yeah. That's I know that makes you so proud.
Yes.
Just to know that Austin is carrying on.
Yeah.
And everything his grandfather taught him. That's amazing. I know a little bit, part of Gary's story is, I guess the Alzheimer's, I hope I'm saying it correctly, part of the story. I know that was one thing that kind of he experienced in life. When we think about grief, Heather, of course we think about people passing away, obviously. But sometimes I feel like I'm going through that currently with one of my family members. They have dementia, and it's kind of like I've started somewhat grieving his life a little bit, because it's kind of like, okay, I know this person will never really be the same. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know who this was up until now. And a lot has shifted, you know, not all the way shifted, but I know those are two similar conditions. When you guys found out about that, did you grieve what you met, like, how you may have seen, like, okay, how is this going to change my daddy's life? Did you think about all that in that moment? How was that for you?
I went into, I went into research mode. Like, I was one of them, like, if you tell me something, like, I'm trying to research it. I'm Googling, like, how do you fix this? What do we do? Like, I went into full blown, like, what are we going to do here? So my dad was diagnosed very young at 58. Him and Pat Summit were both diagnosed at 58, and they both passed away at 62. So that, usually the earlier you are diagnosed in your life, the quicker it progresses. So when someone gets dementia at 80 and 90, it's kind of a slower process than when you're diagnosed at a younger age. I didn't know that with my dad. And so I instantly thought, that's not what he's got. He's just 58. Like, I instantly was kind of like in a denial about that. And then as it progressed, I seen things. Just like he was forgetting simple things. Like one night, my mom couldn't find him, and he had drove to work at like 9 o'clock at night. And he didn't go till 4 in the morning. We constantly talked on the phone in the mornings. I'm an early bird. He's an early bird. So like 4:30, 5 o'clock a.m. phone calls for us was a normal. They got less and less, you know, or if I even called him, he wouldn't answer. And it was, he may not know where the phone is type of thing. And so as I started it, I truly think that my mom grasped it from day one, because, I mean, she lived with him, and they had known and been together since they were 14 years old. So she knew him. She knew his actions, the way he talked, walked. I mean, she knew him inside and out. So she grasped it even before we got an official diagnosis. She knew something was wrong. But my brothers, they were in denial. You know, there ain't nothing wrong with dad. You know, he's okay. I don't think they truly seen where it was until Michael, my baby brother, was the one who went and found him the night he drove to work at 9 o'clock at night. And the next day he called me and he was like, sis, what's wrong with daddy? I'm like, what do you mean? I've been telling you this. Like, it was one of those, like, where have you been? Like, I've, this has been going on, Michael. You guys just haven't seen it. And I feel like as a girl of the family and the oldest, we're like the boss and the leader. So we do things. We take charge before our brothers. If something has to be planned, we're gonna plan it, you know. And so I took that on, and through that I knew, I was like, you know, when this comes down to it, it's gonna be me. And I didn't really think that my dad would pass quickly. It was never a, is he going to be gone in 4 years? Like, I never thought about that. But it was right after he had got diagnosed, my parents were like, we're going to go to the funeral home and do our planning. And will you go with us? And I was like, okay. And so we went, and, you know, they're picking out caskets and what they want in them and what they want on their tombstone and how they want their tombstone. And then we went out there and looked at a plot. And my dad is, like, jokingly, like, laying down, like, how do I look? And I'm like, Dad, this is not funny. Like, it was so hard for me that day. And they were just going through it.
Yeah.
And I remember telling them, like, this isn't fun for me. Like, this is not. Right. I don't want to think about this, you know, type of thing. But, you know, they were at peace with it. And I just didn't understand it at the time.
Yeah.
And, I think my dad knew they knew when the time came, they didn't want that burden on us, you know?
Right.
They didn't want that. Mm-hmm. Like, that planted. It's a lot. And when my dad did pass, that was the biggest burden off of us, you know, like, we didn't have to go down there and wonder what does he want, you know?
Yeah.
And the actual casket he picked, he actually got buried in because they still had it there. All these things, like, I'm like, if God planned out a plan, this was surely it because the things just fell in place. And so I tell everyone, like, if you're able to do that for your family, I feel like that's the greatest gift you can give them because number one, you're not thinking straight when that happens. You can't, you know, you don't know. It's like, what song, what flower, what you know, it's like your brain is so on overdrive and you're just going through the motions. But when it's done and you just have to go and sign a couple pieces of paper or guarantee that that's what's happening, it just took a big, big burden off of us. So, but I do think that when I started grieving him the most is when one day I had went to check on him and I forgot their house key. And so I was knocking on the door and my parents have like this glass and it's frosted, but you can still see through. And I'm like, Daddy, you know, I'm looking through. I'm like, it's me. Open the door. And he would not open the door for me. And so we live like 2 miles from them. So I drove home real quick. I got the key and I went back and I opened the door and I was like, why you didn't open the door for me? And he said, I didn't know who you were. Plain as day. And that just like gut punched me that, you know, because my mom had told him, like, do not open the door for anybody. Do not answer the phone if you don't know who's calling. And I remember coming back home and I told Jermaine, I was like, I'm losing it. Like, I'm losing it. Like, then there was days, like, he knew exactly who we were. And then there was days he didn't. You know, he got to where he couldn't say my name. He wouldn't say Heather. He would say baby girl. And that's what he called me when I was little. So he had, like, reverted back to when I was a child. But I do think anyone that's going through that, you start grieving that person before they actually go. Someone that I just admire so much that's going through this right now is Alicia McGuire. She is going through that with her mom right now. And, you know, she posts funny videos and they're always doing something. And like, I know her and I talked a while back and I told her, I was like, you don't know how much that does my heart good. Like, that comforts me so much that she gets those glimpses of her, you know, in those moments. And, like, forever, she will be so grateful whenever that time comes that she has those that she can cherish. I mean, I have several of my dad with Cam and, you know, funny things he said. And it's like, when that's all you have.
That's what you hold
to so closely. But she is navigating that so gracefully. And the patience and the compassion, you know, and the funniness that she has with her. I told her, I said, you don't know how much comfort that brings me. You know, and she doesn't plan that. She's like, I'm not, it's not about me, you know, at all. No. But she doesn't know how many other people. I'm just one person. Telling how many other people that ripple is going on and on and on because she's doing it. So
reaching a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Video memories is something that I've always took pictures and videos stuff. And even when it comes to Quinn, like, it's so many times, put the camera down. And I'm still like on the side recording everybody. And now I got those, like you said, you have those memories to go back and be able to, and be like, wow, like, you know, we really had some good times.
Yes.
And so I'm glad you brought that up about Alicia and that. And yeah, it does help others.
Yeah.
You know, it really brings some joy to your day when you have days that are very dark. Mm-hmm. That can really uplift your spirit. So yes. I'm glad you mentioned that, Heather. I like one thing I was noticing on your Facebook page, you had made a post on your daddy's, I call it Angelversary.
That's something
that my cousins taught me, the Armstrong side, when my Aunt Louise died, my grandmother's sister. Mm-hmm. And so they have an Angelversary for Aunt Louise every couple of years. But one thing you had wrote on November 11th concerning your dad, you wrote about how you missed your dad. Don't get me wrong. You missed him, the things you missed about him. But then you kind of reframed that way of thinking. And you was like, but I know he's walking the streets of gold. But I know, you know, Jesus healed him from this disease he had. You positively reframed it. And then I think you even mentioned something about his legacy and just being thankful for the legacy he left here on this earth. How did you find that type of peace, Heather, after his transition? Because that is very powerful. When I went through and read that, I'm like, I need to maybe look at my own situation different, but you have to get to a point of being, feeling that way and finding that type of peace. And I just want to know how you got to that point.
Wasn't overnight. Yeah. Even at his funeral, he wanted the song by Kool and the Gang, Celebrate.
My mom
honored that wish, and we played that song. And I remember people clapping and singing.
Yeah.
And I was so angry. Like, I was like, how dare they clap and celebrate, like, right now? You know?
In this moment.
And I'm on the front row. And, like, you know, the front row is different, like she says.
Yes, it is.
The front row is different.
Yeah, it is.
I remember sitting there so angry that people were, like, happy and singing that song. And, like, even though I knew my dad picked that song, because we did know that ahead of time, but I honestly didn't think they would play it at church.
Right. It's a little odd. Yeah.
I was like, you know, he said that, but they're not going to play that at church. But I can remember sitting there, and I remember Jermaine just holding me because I was just crying so hard.
Yeah.
And, like, the anger, I was just fireball hot from the inside out. And when I look back at that, you know, I was angry in that moment, not at the people, but when I look back, they truly had grasped what my dad wanted.
Yeah.
And I know my dad would not want me sad all the time. Like, he would not want me mourning him and stopping to what I'm doing.
That's right.
Because of him. And I know my dad would not want to live with Alzheimer's. Like, he was very competitive, played baseball, probably could have played for the pros. Like, he was just that good. And to see him become fragile and quiet, my dad has never been quiet. You know, when he talked, he was loud and he laughed loud. And I just seen, like, he was a different person. And so he wasn't living. Like, he truly was just existing. He wasn't living. And so, like, yes, I'm sad that he's not here to see these grandbabies, because, like, he has all these grandkids, and Woodson, my brother's littlest one, he is going to be the ball player of our family.
Gotcha.
Like, it was Austin in that generation, and then Woodson's now going to take over, I fully believe. But I know he would, you know, Sayla's the only girl, her and Kate the only girls, like, I was the only girl, but all these boys, I just know how much he would love them, but I also know, like, none of them got to experience him like Austin did. Yeah. You know, they wouldn't know him as Austin knew him. And that's not how he would have wanted them to remember him.
Right.
And that's not how he wants, you know, he would joke with Jermaine all the time. You know, even the day we got married, he was like, "You sure about this dude? Like, you know what you're about to get into. Because once you take her, I'm not taking her back. I'm not taking her back." So I know that in my heart, like, he would never come back here.
Yeah.
For that. Right. As much as he loves us, and this is not our forever home.
That's right.
You know, and
we're just passing through. That's right.
It's hard. Like, when we're born, God knows the day we're leaving here.
Yes,
you know,
true,
like, he knows whether it's, you know, a couple hours, a couple years, 30 years, 62 years, 94 years, like, he knows. And so, like, you know, that poem about the dash, like, that importance of living that. And as I look at people like Quentin, like, I know his whole family. And I truly believe he lived that dash. Like, he lived his life to the fullest. And, you know, I always say, too, God takes the good ones first.
Yeah, that's true. That's
true. But these people that, you know, I myself, like, connect with you on that because, you know, Jermaine's brother was murdered. We still don't know who did that. And so we live with that every day, too, that, like,
every day.
In the back of our mind, like, is this person speaking to us?
I know that. Yep, that's right.
Is this person?
You sure do.
No, all these thoughts go through your head.
Yeah.
And so, I just truly believe, like, I found peace with that with my dad. That I know they wouldn't come back here.
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't want to come back and be what it is here on in this world. So. Right. I have to just hold on to that. As much as I miss him every day. Like, I want to call him. I want to ask him things. I want him to come fix something at the house. Like, I want, you know, or try to fix something. He was not a Mr. Fix It, but, you know, you still call your daddy.
Yeah, you do. You do. Hey, that should go.
It's just one of those. I just found that I know he would not want to come back to be that person. And even if he could be healed and not have Alzheimer's and come back, he still wouldn't come back, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Quinn used to always say that, Heather, he, you know, they sing a song that goes, you know, like, "This world is not my home. I'm just passing."
Yes.
But he would always say, "Tiffany, you know, I passed away." Because he was kind of like what you was talking about your daddy, like, acting like he was like, you know, "This is how I'm going to be. I want to be buried like this." And all, and I'm like, "I don't want to talk about that, Quinn. Like, this going to be when we get old, you know." But one thing he would always say is, "Tiffany, there's something more to this life here on earth." Yeah. He would always say that. Mm-hmm. Like, he was not scared of that road at all. And so that's a good way to look at how we reframe, you know, how we look at our loved ones that have passed on, Heather.
Really, and God puts like that in them. Like, if God put that in Quentin to put that to others. I mean, I truly believe that people that have that openness about that, and all that, it is like, it's a God-given spirit.
It's special. It's special. Yes. It is. It is. It's a special thing.
Yes.
And when you're not even afraid of what that looks like, you know, it's something more than just here. Mm-hmm. It's something greater, something better. Yes. And so when you have that perspective, it shifts, and it honestly helps. It can help your family navigate after you leave here a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I can say, "No, he wasn't scared to die." Like, I at least have that sense of peace. And so it's, like you say, it's holding on to those type of things that I can see where that can really bring a person peace.
And you'll find other things, Tiffany, as you go through that. Because I know that hit you so hard.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, I have watched you walk through it. Still going through it.
Still,
like,
right currently now.
Yes. But I do see those pieces that you put together.
Mm-hmm.
Points.
Yeah.
That you may not even recognize. You know, like, this podcast itself.
Yeah.
This
wouldn't
have happened without Quinn.
No. You're right. You
but
are
I mean,
so
look
right.
how much bigger, you know, you would never have tapped into that side of yourself that you knew you had in you.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
But God was like, "I'm going to give you Quentin."
Yeah.
And give you this purpose.
Yes. Yeah. Show me how to navigate this. Because like I say, I mean, we talked about this stuff all the time and navigating it. And now it's like, I just want to continue his legacy, how he would help people and cook for people and sing at funerals and I'll play and all that. It's like, yeah, we got to keep it pushing. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate those words, Heather. You don't know what that means. I really appreciate it. So in talking about, shifting gears a little bit, the process to moving forward and just giving people grace. One question I have for you is, did you ever question God in any of what we've talked about, from Ashley to Bryce to your daddy? Like, did you question God in some of the moments?
Absolutely.
And if so, how did you navigate that?
Absolutely. Like, still question. Like, I feel like I still got a list that I still want to kind of check off for me.
Check off.
Like, I still got the list in my Bible, man. Like, I have to answer some of these, you know.
Right.
Even though
it
says we're not to question his ways. I think it's normal. Like, in the Bible, like, Peter, John, like, everybody questioned him. And, like, what something that brought me back, and I'm not a Bible scholar, so I don't know all the verses and right to where to go, but I do know the stories. But he grieved Lazarus.
That's right.
And so he knows like what we feel too. And one thing that hit me really hard when I was in a grief group after Bryce, you know, I was just like, why my babies? You know, why two? You know, God, I'm going to give you that one, but two, why two? You know, and this lady looked at me and she said, God gave his son.
Yeah.
That's and true. I was like, ugh, you know, like gut punch.
It hit you.
And I was like, you're right. You know, like I am not above him.
That's right.
You know, I am not above him. And but when you're in that, it's like, how dare you say that to me? Because that's how I felt. Like when I left that place, I remember driving back from Nashville and I was like, how dare her? Wait till the next group. I'm going to confront her. Like I, you know, was angry at that. And then it was years later. Like I never spoke to her again. Like we would go to that group and I would say hi, but I had no conversation for her. But she was at a totally different place than me.
Yeah.
And so I had to learn, like, how many times have I said, because sometimes you don't know what to say. Maybe
That's true.
Said something to somebody that when they were in that moment of grief that I hurt them.
Yeah.
Or I didn't say the right thing, or I told them to stop crying when they really needed to still cry. So much of that, like, has come full circle for me, but absolutely question.
That's been a big topic about, and I thought about it too in the Bible, like, God does give us answers. So I, you know, it's kind of like, I don't think he minds it, honestly, Heather.
No.
Like, he's gonna answer us.
And it's,
you know,
on his time though. Cause like, sometimes you get these answers, like, I had all these questions, like, but I haven't got some of these answers till like a couple years ago. You know,
that's right.
And then I'm like, oh, that's it. You know, But then I don't think if he would have answered me in that way, it wouldn't have been the same.
That's true. That is a good way of looking at that as well.
So
navigating out of that, Heather, what are some things you do just to keep yourself grounded, like even right now? Like, you know, grief is a process, but we all have to find a way to keep moving forward. I never say move on. I always say moving forward. What are some ways you do that now, just when you think of your well-being and how
do
you
get up
rooted?
Really early. I get up really in the morning. I get up at 2:45, alarm goes off, and I'm in my office, which is here. And I am in this Bible every morning.
I have a
Devo, and I have just found, like, I have to start my day like that.
Like that.
No, I have to, because if I say I'm going to do it after work, I don't do it. Because something happens. But
yes,
if I do it before I even start my day, Okay. And I'm going to be real honest. I literally pee and I come in here. I don't brush my teeth.
Gotcha.
Because if I get distracted, I'm not going to do it. Like, I have to get in it. And, you know, some days, you know, I have a Devo, and then some days I don't do that. I just literally am like, God, just direct me on what I need today.
Gotcha.
I need to be filled up so I can fill someone else up if it's needed. And, you know, the way the world is now, we're so busy. We're so, our phones are attached to us. I mean, like we were talking about before we even came on.
Right.
Turn all this off so we won't be distracted.
Distracted. That's right. That's right.
And it's like to just focus and be still. Just, and sometimes it's not reading. Sometimes it's literally just sitting here and trying to steal my heart. Like I have this practice that I put one hand on my heart and I put one hand on my stomach. And I breathe in five times and out. And I just, that whole time, I'm like, let me just focus on breathing. Because sometimes it's hard to just breathe when you're in grief.
That's right. Yes, you know, it is.
You feel like you can't get a breath or it's so much, your mind just races with so much stuff. Like, I don't know what it is to be still.
Right, you know, right, what
is it to be still and turn off everything?
Yeah.
And so I have found that that has centered me so much. And then at night, I try to pick five things that I'm grateful for before bed. Like, even when I'm laying in bed, and it may just be that, Lord, thank you that I was not in traffic today.
Yeah.
And it can be, or it could be very big. You know, thank you for saving someone's life or whatever.
Yeah.
I just think five things. And, you know, sometimes five things is hard. To name, you know, when you're in the midst of something, it's hard to be like, God, I'm grateful, but you know, sometimes it's, I'm grateful I didn't snap on her today.
That's right. That's right.
You know, like just be real and raw. And I found out like, that's how God wants you just as you are.
That's
so
true.
If it is, thank you. I didn't snap on her today. That's what he wants.
It is what it is, he wants your honesty,
Or, you know, God, I'm mad at you.
You know? Nothing's wrong with that, too. You're right. I like how you do a morning and a evening type of routine, Heather. Mama does the morning thing, too, because she's like, that's when the house is still, you know, it's just her and dad now, but, you know, like, everything's quiet. And I think she's like this, similar to what you said, starting my day out, right with God on my mind and him letting him, allowing him to navigate that space with me in the mornings. And I also like that you do the deep breathing. That's one way to regulate our bodies. And a lot of people don't really think about that, but it does wonders when you do like breath work correctly. And like you said, eliminating the distractions. I don't have nothing like really being in tune with yourself and what you need in that moment. And I think that's important. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something nobody's ever really talked about on this platform, but it's super important. Super important. So, okay. You done gave us those tools. So I want you to talk about, I know you do like a grief counseling or program. I want you to talk about what you have going on right now in your life, whatever it is you want to promote. I know that's one big thing that I did want you to mention.
Okay. So in 2022, I got my death doula certificate that I'm certified. And so how that happened was, you know, sometimes a death hits you harder than others. You know, you have one that you kind of expect. Then you have the shocker one, like all these different ones. And so my sister-in-law, Ron, passed. And I remember, you know, she was in the hospital with COVID. And we had got a phone call earlier in the morning that they were weaning her off the vent. So we were like, this is great. She's doing good. And then about 12:30 that day, we got the call that she was gone. And I fell to my knees. Like, it hit me so hard. And I didn't want to talk to anybody. Like, I just kind of shut down. Like, of course, everybody started flooding over here to the house. And you know how it goes. And I just completely shut down. And the next day, two of my friends were like, we're getting you out of the house. Put your gym shoes on. Let's go. Okay. And I said, okay. I trusted them and I knew whatever they were going to do was to help me. And yeah. So we went to Steel Falls and we did.
Okay.
And
oh, wow. Okay.
One of my friends, we were hiking up and she was like, Heather, you're going to be a death doula. I said, what is that?
What's that?
Like, I don't even know what yeah. that is. Mm-hmm. And she was like, how many people have you lost?
Mm-hmm.
From like my dad from 2018. And I was like, Ron is number 44.
Mm-hmm.
And she was wow. like, Heather. And I'm, you know, it was from like parents Ooh. To grandparents to siblings, you know, on my mm-hmm. husband's side to cousins yeah. to friends, all these yeah. people. I mean, Jermaine's side of the family is huge. So I felt like yes. at yeah. one point yeah. we were going through a cycle, like we had a funeral every week. I felt like, Man. You know. For his friends dying, Stacy passed, Tice passed, yeah. Dunk, like all these
yeah.
things.
Yeah, yeah.
And mm-hmm. Then I had several, it was just crazy. And
right.
she was like, you're going to be a death doula. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. Like, I've heard of uh-huh. a birthing doula. What the heck is that?
Right, you know? Right.
I just pushed it to the side. I was like, uh-huh. Lori's just whatever.
yeah.
And
yeah.
she was like, no, when you get home, I want you okay. to write a list of all these people that okay. you lost and kind of how you felt when they passed. Okay. And I remember I got to like number 27 on the list and like for all of them, I'm writing the name and it was easy. I was like, name this, daddy, uh-huh. this, granny, this, you know, I got yeah. to 27 and I was just numb.
Oh.
It was like, at that point I knew whatever word I was writing, mm-hmm. like I wasn't really thinking about it. Like I was just okay. doing it to kind of do it.
Yeah.
And so I stopped. I had wrote the names and then I was going back to do the words and I just stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And she called me and I said, it's so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much. And she was like, you know, you're the only person I know that has lost all these people. You know, she said, you've lost a baby. You lost a parent. You lost a grandparent. Mm-hmm. You've lost someone to a suicide. You've lost a friend. Like, she started naming all these scenarios, like cancer, COVID, like all these things. Uh-huh. And she said, you've navigated all of that. And I never had thought of it like that. Because when you're in it, uh-huh. you don't, of course, you don't see it. Like that.
No.
And she said, you're always just so in the moment when that happens, you're in control. And you, mm-hmm. it's easy for you to do it. And I never thought of it that way. Because when I'm in it, I'm like, this is hard.
Right.
Oh, yeah. But from the outside perspective looking in, she was like, Heather, you just do it with grace. You know, mm-hmm, you can speak. Like, I have spoke at several funerals about somebody. And she was like, you just do it. And it's not, she's like, it's like effortless to you. And mm-hmm. I never thought about it. And she was like, I really think you need to do this death doula thing. So I started doing a little bit of research on it. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't tell anybody. And I was okay. like, I'm going to take this class.
Yeah.
See. And then if I'm not going to do it, I don't have to go back and tell them I'm not doing it. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
Like, I'm going to do this undercover. And so I did the class and I actually graduated the class on my grandmother's birthday that had passed, which was very ironic. And so part of my final was to write your own eulogy.
Ooh.
And we were on a Zoom call and she was like, who wants to go first? Which I didn't know what the question was. And I was like, me. I just want to get it over with, you know? And she was like, okay, you have 3 minutes to do your eulogy. And I was like,
3 minutes.
I was like, what? And so this was July 21st and my birthday is July 16th. So I was like, okay, think quick, Heather. What do people say about you on your birthday? Like, I tried to go back to remember like my Facebook post, like, she's smart, you know, like, so I'm like, okay.
Yes.
It's Heather, you know, Stuart Lipscomb, daughter of, like, uh-huh. I'm like doing it, right?
Get it all done.
And she was like, oh my gosh, you did so good. And I was like, thank you. And when I got done, I was like, what just happened? Like, it just kind of came out.
I bet. And
So I of course I graduated from that. And then I called my two girlfriends that went with me after Ron had passed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, yeah. I sent them the picture of the certificate. And they were like, what is that?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I graduated. I did it. And they were like, what? And I was like, yeah, I did it. And so with that, it's kind of like a birthing doula, but it's a death doula. So there's kind of different ways you can do it. You can go about it why they're in transition. Like you can sit with the family and kind of lead and guide them with their hospice people on what to expect. And you're just kind of like the bystander, or it can be after, like helping them with the funeral planning, helping them write the obituary, finding out all the names of these family members. Helping them afterwards, like, when do you want to clean the house? Do you want to donate the clothes? Do you not want to? Right. Do you want something else? Like, all these different things. And so my main thing has been the after. Some of it has been, like, we know someone's going to pass. And they've called me and said, hey, can you meet us at the funeral home tomorrow? You know, will you be with us there? And some of it, I just kind of sit there. I'm just support to be there as an outside source. And some of it, I literally have to kind of take control and help them because they're not able to. And then the after the grief is, I do some in person where I will go and meet. But most of it is through a Zoom. And I kind of just, I don't have an agenda, Tiffany. I kind of let it go where the people need it. A scenario, one of my clients, she lost a child. That's how we connected. Her child was 17. And so we connected on that. I don't know what it's like to lose a 17-year-old.
Right.
And so I told her that up front, like, I don't know what you're feeling. I know as a mom what it is to lose a child, you know, and we're just kind of meet in the middle. But just walk through them through the anger. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's a stage.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay to feel like you're alone in it. You know, all these different things. And so I do that through Zoom. Or I will meet in person. I kind of just, like I said, I just let it be what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Several meetings hasn't been about that at all. It's been about their life, how they're truly living. The name of it is To Live Again After, because there is a life before that person.
Yeah.
And there's a life after that person.
That's right.
And it's bigger than sometimes just people. It can be, it can be a divorce. It could be a house. It could be a dream that's not going to happen now. I mean, part of my thing is I would love for my dad to see these grandbabies. So, like, I grieve that. Like, at Christmas, when we're all there, I'm like, man, I wish my dad was here with a video camera video and like he did us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, part of that is just, I don't think people realize there's so many different things you can grieve. You know, friendships, expectations of things. Mm-hmm. There's so many different things. It's not just death.
No, it's
and
not.
I had to learn that, you know.
Yeah, that's something I've learned too, Heather. I mean, when I think about me and Quinn, I mean, we wanted kids, at least one. I mean, we get old now, so we had settled on, we just gonna have one child.
Yeah.
So yeah, you do grieve. It's a lot of different things you grieve. Your future.
I say it's those that grieve and coulda, woulda.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
We would have done this. We could have done this, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. What you're doing is true ministry, Heather. I didn't even know that existed. I thank you for even bringing that death doula, you know, term to me, because I've never heard of that before. Yeah. And I did not know you offered that service. And that is very much needed, especially when things happen and people have no idea as to which direction to go, what to do. You know, if there are people who like really aren't associated with church, they have no clue of how any of this is going to work. So to know it's somebody, you know, with the credentials you have to come in and help them navigate that, that's amazing.
Thank you.
It is. Do you have a Facebook page for that? Or
I do, and an Instagram, and it's just To Live Again After.
Okay.
And then I give my cell phone out. I know that's terrible, but yeah. I just feel like, you know what? God is going to protect me, what he needs to protect me from. And yeah. I give people my phone. Like, there was I gave my phone number to a homeless lady one time, and my best friend was like, Heather. Oh. No, like,
you had good intention. You just want to be approachable, and you want, it's a word for that. You just want the people to know, like, I'm here and available.
Yeah.
And I'll put all of it in our description in this episode. IG handle, your Facebook, and your phone number if you want me to. I'll throw it all in there. Because I think that is just amazing work. And I just did not know that existed.
Yeah.
And
it's I didn't either. If it wasn't
much friend, needed.
I had no clue either.
Yeah.
But it is needed. So much I've seen, I want to say since COVID, because it impacted so many people so quickly. And it didn't have an age on it, you know.
No, it did not. Not at all.
There was nothing with that. So I feel like it kind of took off, like grief and like healing and these journeys where people were like, this is needed. I need this. Yeah. You need this. We need this, you know. And I think I support anybody that's like on this, like, and in prayer, and like some people probably don't even know you pray for them, but it's like, Lord, let me lift them up to you. You know, whatever is in their plan for today, be with them, you know.
Yeah,
because
that's right.
You never know.
You never know. And it's good to know, you know, people are, you know, your own people's minds, and you know, that they are praying. And that's really, really important for sure. So Heather, it sounds like to me you found purpose in a lot of the pain that you have went through. So I'm going to skip to this last little our little outro question. I always ask people, of course, Quinn was all into music. If you could have one song be your life story, what would that song be and why?
Oh gosh, it's Dolly Parton. I know it's so crazy, but she has a song. It's called "You Better Get to Livin'." And it's an old song, so it's like one of those that I randomly came across.
Okay.
But it's basically just saying, like, you better get to living. Like, don't let these things hold you back. Like, each day, you never know.
Yeah.
Like, we might make it to lunch. We might not.
That's right. That's right.
And then here recently, just on the Greek, like, that's like my life one, but I have to put this one in there. Brandon Lake and Jelly Roll released, you know, Hard Fought Hallelujah. And I heard the song before he did the collab with Jelly Roll, and it just hit me. I remember driving down the interstate, and I couldn't turn our radio up like no more.
Loud enough.
I had it so loud, and I was singing, you know, the best I ever sang in the car. You know how that? But that song is so true. Like, sometimes it is a hard fought hallelujah.
Yes.
Like, you,
it is.
Sometimes you don't want to praise God through this storm.
That's right. It's right.
But it's so true. And, like, in the end, he's going to get the praise no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, you don't, may not think it in it, but he's going to get it. So,
that's right.
Those two right now, I would have to say, define me pretty well. So.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to. I feel like I've heard that one. I need to look up the Dolly Parton one, though.
Yeah.
I don't think I've been. And you said it's an older song, it may not be something I probably have heard.
Man, it was probably before I was even born. Like, it's an old song, but it's like the words, like the music is not that great. Trust me.
Yeah, it's the lyrics.
I mean, it's an older one, but it's the lyrics. Like, even if you just read the lyrics,
just reading them,
it's like, man. I better do this. Like, don't let these days slip away from you, you know?
Right. And it's so easy to happen, but we have to be mindful and conscious to not allow them to.
Yeah.
Honestly, you're right. You are 100% right about that. Well, Heather, we kind of, at the end, is there anything, I feel like we've talked about so much in this episode. I feel like, we've touched a lot on just awareness of dementia, Alzheimer's. We've reached on that. Of course, infant loss. We've hit a lot of different things, and even your death, doula, the certification you have, what are some last thoughts you want to leave with our audience today from your episode? Some key points.
Well, I want to thank you, first of all, for just having me. When you reached out to me, I was like, yes, absolutely. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I have I've watched you from a little bitty girl.
Yeah.
And you're born to do big things. I truly believe that. You have amazing parents. And I know they have been with you through all this.
Yes, ma'am. They have, yes.
I have seen 100%. It. You are a testimony. And I truly think this is just the beginning for you.
I receive it, Heather. I think
Quentin is so proud of you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think he's like, that's my girl.
Yeah.
And it's big. Yeah. It's going to be big.
Thank you so much.
I truly feel that. And you just keep going.
Like, I will.
I know days are hard, but like, you will survive 100% of your hardest days because you ain't broke the record yet. You've survived every one of them. So,
that is so
just
true.
Keep that in the back of your mind always. Like, I can do hard things.
Yeah. Can do I will. It. I will definitely do that for sure.
So.
Oh, I appreciate you, Heather, so
You're
much.
Welcome.
You don't know. This has been such a breath of fresh air. I feel like I've learned so much. I feel like we've cried, we've laughed, but this is what this space is about.
Yeah.
It's just about being, showing our humanity, being genuine and being real, because life is real and life be life, and as people say,
it be life, and for sure.
Yes. And I think when we can have these spaces where we can really talk, you know, and kind of give hope to people and even ourselves, because we all are going through.
Yeah.
It's just so beneficial. And so I just appreciate you. I do.
Thank
you know,
you'll
always be family no matter what. You know, we always family forever.
I know.
We stuck together
forever and ever. I know.
Yes.
I was thinking the other day, I'm like, how many years have it really been?
And I know.
It 30.
Yeah. Probably so. Yeah.
37 years. I'm like, man,
yes.
A long time.
And time flies by. I'm like, oh my goodness. Time goes so fast.
But
it does. It does.
I love you. I've always loved you.
I love you too, Heather.
You're still my people.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Forever. Well, all right. Well, we're going to sign off, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode today. Thank you again, Heather, for being here. And so one way I always like to end the episode, Quinn used to always say, all is well. So I'm going to end it with all is well.
Yes.
All is well. Well, all right. We will see you guys next time. Stay tuned and have a good week.
Yes.
Bye. We hope that today's episode has encouraged you and helped to identify strategies to navigate your grief and begin the process of moving forward in life. Grief Tribe, Healing Vibes. What were some key takeaways from today's episode? Drop a comment below and remember to like, follow, and subscribe.